Online Trading Academy is a leader in investing and stock trading education. Sign up for a class today to learn proven strategies on how to trade smarter. Text Cairo to 57682 and register for a free workshop in Bellevue and other surrounding areas. Text Cairo to 57682.
The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studios and streaming on Facebook Live. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. I got a bunch of local news to get to in The Big Lead. So where are we on this whole Bill Cosby thing? Do we care about this story? I'm looking at CNN and Fox News. They both have helicopter live aerial shots of an SUV that's taken Bill Cosby somewhere.
I think it is a big story. I mean, it's being billed as the first basically conviction of a big celebrity in the Me Too era.
Yeah. Found guilty of this 1979 sexual assault. Do you remember when he was on the show a few years ago?
Uh-huh.
He was coming to Seattle, and so we did a phone interview with him, and I thought he was in early stage dementia when I talked to him, because his stories just went on. And I've never found him particularly funny, even, you know, in his heyday.
I loved him on the show. I loved him on the Bill Cosby show. And I loved that show, as we've talked about. But
And I didn't watch that show. But I, you know, and his comedy, I know that most comedians who I respect, many of them cite him as one of the best and most influential, and that he was groundbreaking in how he would just sit and tell stories about his life, which is essentially what his sitcom was about. But one of the biggest mistakes and biggest shocks of my radio life was the day of the OJ verdict, because I thought that was going to be a huge, you know, the phones will be ringing off the hook.
Yeah.
It was when he was found not guilty, the first trial. And that was one of the craziest days of my life up till then, because the Mariners had beaten the Angels in a one-game playoff the day before.
Mm-hmm.
I got to fly a red-eye that night from here to New York City, because the Mariners started the playoff series against the Yankees the very next day. I go to my hotel room right in Times, or right by the train station. Where the Mariners were saying, I turn on the TV, the OJ jury was just coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And they found him not guilty. And it was, you know, one of the biggest stories of our lifetime, crime stories.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I go out to Yankee Stadium with Kevin Kremen that morning. He sets up, I'm going to do my broadcast. The Mariners are about to play their first playoff game in the history of the franchise.
Which was a huge story locally.
The OJ verdict had just come in an hour or two earlier, and I figure I'll just give out the phone numbers and the phones will be on fire. Crickets were chirping, which never happened. When I was doing caller-driven show, the phone lines would always be jammed on every, you know, I could do sexiest cartoon character and the phone lines would be jammed. But I tried to talk about the OJ verdict. And it was like nobody wanted to talk about it. And I couldn't, to this day, I don't understand that.
That's shocking to me.
Yeah. It was one of the deadest topics.
And maybe
ever.
Because they weren't expecting you to talk about it at that moment because of everything else that was going on. But that's weird. That's hard to explain.
So I haven't been following the Bill Cosby trial because I'm still shell-shocked, Ursula. It's been 23 years since that OJ day, and that's still one of the most baffling days as a host that I've ever had.
Yeah, we're definitely covering it. I've been covering it in my news. CBS is covering it. Right now, Bill Cosby's attorney just finished speaking, and then now we've got the prosecutors who are speaking. So, yeah, there is a lot of coverage going on right now.
Okay, and we'll keep you posted in the news.
And again, he was found guilty.
Yes, and could go away for the rest of his life.
I mean, the guy's 80.
Yeah.
And each conviction carries 10 years, potentially.
So,
he's done.
So Bill Cosby is done. And we will keep you posted as the news. And we're hearing from the prosecutors and the defense attorney, as Ursula just said. All right. With that as mere prelude, let's get right to our top story.
The Big Lead. Top story.
It's really sad for me to watch the steady but sure degradation of our entire region. And we have stories today leading things off up in Snohomish County, down in Gig Harbor, all around the region. As we've said, this is not just a Seattle issue, not even close. But what has happened is, as our region has decided for the most bizarre of reasons, and I'm not a big conspiracy theory guy, but I still believe that George Soros, who has long pined for legalization of drugs and is behind the Vancouver heroin death injection dens, and he, I've little doubt, since we're modeling the Seattle and King County heroin death injection dens after Vancouver, I just believe that this is part of this plan that will legalize drugs, not just weed. And it, basically, that's what they've done in Seattle, in Snohomish County. They're doing it around the country with disastrous results. I watched a video this morning of the busiest BART station down in the Bay Area. And this one commuter, he walked down the hallway, and every day he would pull out his iPhone and record video. There are heroin addicts against the wall in this hallway leading to the BART line, and they're just injecting left and right, and they're throwing up on the tile, and the cops aren't doing anything about it. And that's what's happening in downtown Seattle now. But we've decided that we're going to be the heroin center of America. And the consequences for innocent, law-abiding taxpayers like you and me, it's catastrophic. So down in Gig Harbor, there's a woman. She's going to join us coming up right at the bottom of the hour here. But she came home, found that her house had been absolutely ransacked by burglars. And as we've told you, the cops, they either can't or won't do anything about it because it's happening so dang often. And so you get your life turned upside down because drug addicts need to feed their habit off of your possessions. This woman's name is Mavi McFarlane, and she talked to Channel 4, ComoNews.com.
I was very upset. I felt sick to my stomach.
And so she decided she's going to catch these guys.
I thought, you know what? I'm going to catch these creeps, and I'm going to get all the information together in a package, and I'm going to give it to the police so that they can go and do their job.
Okay, I'm going to make this just a little bit of a tease, because right after the bottom of the hour news at 12:30, we're going to talk to Mavi, and we're going to find out how she tried to catch these guys and whether she did catch these guys. So we will talk to her coming up at 12:30 this afternoon, about less than 20 minutes from now. Also in our region, Snohomish County, we told you the story a couple of days ago about the dirty needles that are everywhere. And so now they have expanded the program so that citizens can go out and pick up dirty needles. Heather Thomas is with the health district there.
It's really the community that's been taking part in this. We knew people were out there cleaning up syringes. We wanted to make sure that if they're doing it, they're doing it safely.
Think about this. We won't arrest somebody who's injecting heroin, but government will spend money to give out kits. So citizens will pick up heroin needles so our children won't catch Hep C or AIDS. And these have bags, they have plastic gloves in them or rubber gloves and tongs to pick up the needle and a bag you dispose them in. But that's what our life is like now, where the citizens have to pick up all the heroin needles that have engulfed our region. Drug addicts are breaking into the house. And what's the solution? Give us more money. By the way, I saw an interview. I'll play this audio a little bit later. But in a tiny village that they have, it's called Licton Springs, Licton Heights, crime is skyrocketing. In fact, let me get to the next story in our big lead.
The big lead, big local.
So this Licton Heights village, or Licton Springs, rather, I'm sorry, on 85th and between Aurora, and it's in North Seattle. They put in these tiny homes, but they made them no barrier homes, which means you can shoot up heroin, you can use meth, and the taxpayers will give you a place to live. So I watched Channel 4, Como News. They went out there and they talked with a woman who lives at Licton Springs Village and has since it opened.
If it gets renewed one more year, it'd be a big blessing.
But the neighbors want it shut down before another year because crime has skyrocketed.
When I was homeless in Phoenix, I was literally on the street, eating out of garbage cans and everything.
What? That's not possible. Jenny Durkin and Mike O'Brien and Dow Constantine and Jay Inslee, they said that we're just taking care of our neighbors here in King County, here in the Puget Sound region. Are you telling me this woman came up here from Arizona? She was eating garbage out of garbage cans in Arizona, but decided to come up here where the taxpayers would give her a home and you can continue to use drugs. I don't know if she's a drug user and abuser, but most of the people in these villages are. But she came up from Arizona? Did I hear that correctly? Because I've had politicians telling me for years now, you know, it started with the lie of that phony study that the accused child rapist, Ed Murray, was trying to push down our throats. And where he said, oh, no, they're not on drugs, and they're from around here. I got to play that soundbite again. That can't be true. If it's true, then our politicians have been lying to us, and we all know they never lie.
When I was homeless in Phoenix, I was literally on the street, eating out of garbage cans and everything.
Huh. So is that why they got to raise our taxes? Because people around the country are saying, hey, up in the Puget Sound area, you can use drugs. Cops won't arrest you. You can, if the drugs get tainted, the government will test it for you before you inject it in your veins. Government will even give you a place where you can inject the poison into your veins. And the taxpayers will buy you a home where you can continue to use heroin and meth. Is it possible that maybe people around the country have decided that this is the place to be a drug addict? Because our laws are not enforced and our politicians are hijacking taxpayer money to give to people who were eating out of garbage cans down in Arizona? I'm sorry for this woman's lot in life. I really am. But you know who else I feel bad for? The neighbors. Because crime has gone up 80% around this Licton Springs drug-filled encampment. Eddie King is a neighbor to this place.
The dads had to hunt for needles before we laid out Easter eggs this last year. So, you know, that's something that you never thought you'd have to do.
Can you imagine that this is where we've gotten, that this is what we've become? Where moms and dads have to look and pick up needles before they can hide Easter eggs for their kids. And people are forming neighborhood militias now because they're under siege.
I mean, we've had to do a lot here in the neighborhood with people either coming together and arming themselves or trying to figure out a block watch scenario and spending our own money to protect our home.
Or people of Seattle and King County, you could stop voting like idiots and putting people like Mike O'Brien in charge. Mike O'Brien, who's done everything that he can to encourage this homelessness crisis. Kshama Sawat's done everything possible to maximize this homelessness issue so that they can pass new taxes. That's all this is about. So neighbors are getting robbed. Big deal. We could get an extra $75 million a year. But you're already spending $200 million a year. Yeah, but $275, and we'll solve this problem. And I guess we have a promo running on the radio station now of my on-air bet with Mike O'Brien. Mike O'Brien's too much of a coward to come on this show. Apparently his Duke education He doesn't want to go toe-to-toe with a Shoreline Community College guy, a Ron Bailey School of Broadcast guy. I went to the UW, too. But Michael Bryan, he's one of the guys pushing for the $75 million in tax and $10,000 wager, the homelessness count. I will bet you $10,000, charity of the winner's choice, that the homelessness crisis will be worse 3 years from now by a homelessness count than it is now. Your policies aren't going to do anything except get a bunch more of your buddies six-figure jobs. And I will debate this with you on my show any time you want, Mike O'Brien. And think of all the good you could do with $10,000. Think how much it would hurt me to write that check to whatever whack job charities you support. The biggest charity you support is your party, your government. And I already am pained enough when I have to write my King County property tax check every 6 months. But if you want to take that on, Michael Bryan, you want that bet, let's go. You want to prove to us that $75 million is going to make a difference in this region? Which brings me to another point in the big lead.
The big lead, big local.
I told you yesterday about this Move Seattle levy. They've passed nearly $100 billion in commitments for the Sound Transit criminal scam. They passed a billion-dollar Move Seattle levy. And the voters keep saying yes. Again, like idiots, the voters keep saying yes to the criminal culture that runs things around here. But the Move Seattle levy, they announced, and I had these numbers for you on yesterday's show. They said that bike lanes that they were going to build were going to cost $860,000 a mile. It's turned out to be $13 million a mile. Now they're just off by a tiny bit. It turned out to be 15 times more expensive than what they promised the voters. And now they admit that they cannot execute the projects that you are getting taxed $1 billion for, you and me. And they say, yeah, we can't pull this off, but we're going to keep collecting the taxes. Where's Bob Ferguson, who sues the Trump administration every 24 seconds? Bob Ferguson, they promised something at $800,000 a mile, and it comes in at $13 million a mile? How many contractors are getting rich? How many scam artists have gotten millions of dollars skimmed off this levy that's supposed to alleviate traffic around here? How many, Bob Ferguson? Why don't you go in as Attorney General and throw in prison some of the con artists that are ripping off Sorry, I forgot. They're Democrats. They're your party. You only go after Republican. You only go after Christian florists, right? That's all you do. The clown show continues all the way to Olympia with Bob Ferguson. That is your big lead for today.
The big lead on Cairo Radio.
I'm looking forward to talking to this woman. Her house was robbed, her credit card stolen, and she said, I am going to catch these thieves. She will tell us how and if she succeeded next on The Dory Monson Show. Hey, thanks for listening to The Dory Monson Show podcast, brought to you by Industrious Office. If you are on the search for your business's next home, there's simply no hotter place in the country than downtown Seattle right now. I went on a tour with Emily at Industrious Office. It's an amazing workspace right on 6th and Lenora in the heart of all that Seattle has to offer. Visit industriousoffice.com/Cairo or call Emily to schedule a tour. Mention Cairo, receive your first month lease for free.
Hey there, you're listening to Dory. Did you know that your customers do too? Why don't you advertise here? Give me a call and I'll help you out. Tina Sorensen, General Sales Manager for Cairo Radio, 206-726-6819.
We have seen it more and more throughout the Puget Sound region, the drug crisis that envelops our entire region. It leads to a lot of crimes around the region. And the police have essentially said their hands are tied, and all too often they don't even respond. So sometimes citizens have to take the law and the investigation into their own hands. And that's exactly what this woman down in Gig Harbor did. Her name is Mavi McFarland. She joins us here on Cairo Radio. Hey, Mavi, I appreciate you coming on with me.
Good morning.
Tell me about what happened when you saw that ne'er-do-wells were in your neighborhood.
Well, I came home to a house that was completely upside down. All the drawers, all my property that had any value at all, from iPhones to big-screen TVs to photography cameras, desktop computers, jewelry. It was just awful. It made me sick to my stomach.
You know what? That happened to my wife and me many, many years ago, and I will never forget the feeling of violation and helplessness and anger. I mean, it all goes through your head, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It's just an awful feeling.
Okay, so...
And, you know, you don't feel safe either. You feel like, oh my God, we really want to sleep in this house anymore because they know where you live.
Yeah, absolutely. So how much, I mean, the things you just rattled off, a lot of electronics, how much did they get from you?
I would say, without doing an inventory list yet, probably around $20,000.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm really sorry you had to go through that. But instead of just throwing up your hands, it sounds like you met this with quite a bit of resolve.
I did. I was bound and determined to find these creeps. I mean, I took the mission immediately, and I'm a very busy. I run a couple different businesses, but I took the time for 4 or 5 days to follow through and track these guys in hopes that we could really catch them. I mean, really catch them, and we did.
Oh, this is fantastic.
Figured out a way.
Walk me through this. So how did you decide you were going to track and catch them?
Years ago, a federal police officer told me the best way to catch someone when they steal your credit cards is not to cancel them right away.
So they would use them, and you could track where they were being used?
Exactly. So what I did was I immediately got a fraud alert on my iPhone, and it said, is this your purchase or sale, yes or no? And I thought, I'm going to wait and see where it was.
Okay.
So it showed a number. It said, like, Pacific Washington, and then a number like 3556. I got on the computer, and we Googled it, and it was a 76 station in Silverdale. I live in Gig Harbor.
Okay.
So I immediately, and this was the same night after my burglary, the same day, and I got a hold of the manager there, and I told him that credit cards were stolen out of my desk in my home that day, and could he check the cameras, and he did. Very nice gentleman to help out. His name was Ken Woods, and he looked on his cameras, and he said, yes, I see the man that bought it. Use your card because you have the 4 last digits of your credit card. And that was a way to verify it 100%. He had parked 3 islands out, so we didn't get his car license plate number, but we got a very good picture of him coming into the store using the card with overhead cameras. It was a black African American gentleman in his mid-30s. He had a Steelers black wool coat on and a black cap and black pants. So that's what we had to go on. And he bought a pack of Newport 100s.
Okay.
So then I had that. I asked him to clip that picture and email it to me, which he did. And then the very next morning, I got another fraud alert on my phone, and it was a gas station in Tacoma on South Tacoma Way. I did the same exact thing. I called the manager, a gal by the name of Chris, and asked her to look on the camera and find out who it was. So that's what I did in order to track them.
Okay. All right. This is like talking to Nancy Drew for me right now. You're quite the sleuth. Okay. So they're out there. Now, are they ringing up bills on your card? If you didn't cancel the card, are you liable for whatever they're buying?
No, because banks have insurance fraud.
Okay.
And in the long run, in talking with Chase, I had a credit card with Chase, they have insurance to cover those frauds. And in the long run, they're going to save a lot of money because you get these creeps off the road in jail, and they're doing less stealing of credit cards.
Yeah. Okay. So you're kind of tracking where they're going. You've called a couple of managers. And how did you finally catch the guys?
we caught them because I took the pictures from the first gas station, colored pictures, to the place where the last where the third credit card was used. They charged $50 on a Chase card of mine, and it was within 4 or 5 miles of my office and home. And I went down there that morning. This was 3 days ago, and I gave them the pictures of the black gentleman and his car, blue car, there, so they could keep it on the side counter.
Yeah.
They had charged $50 that morning of gas, but two different cars. Now we have pictures of two white gentlemen, different crooks than the first one. It was a little ring.
Okay.
So he looked on his cameras and had like 30 or 40 pictures of them pumping gas, coming in, really good, clear colored pictures. But it wasn't the black guy, so it's two new guys, right? So we didn't get their license plate, though, but real expensive Chrysler, $35,000 new car, no plates on it yet, and another red Honda. And they shared the gas, so they filled up one car, car moved, the other car got the balance.
Okay.
So now we have three guys with pictures. So I left, they were left there on the counter. So the clerk 2 nights ago, who's very brave, in fact, he really took a chance, in my opinion, I'm going to give him a reward, even though he doesn't want one. He saw the blue car, but he didn't see the black guy that was in the picture on his counter. A white guy came in that he had not recognized. He goes, I know my people. He doesn't come to the store. And he tried to give him my daughter's card. I had gotten her a Citibank card at Costco.
Okay.
And it said Elizabeth on it. And he said to the guy, you know Elizabeth. And he goes, oh, I got the wrong card. And he went back to the car to get a different credit card, probably another stolen one.
Yeah, of course.
He saw that blue car, which was an unusual car because it had aftermarket rims that were fancy rims. So he pushed the panic button under the counter, thinking there's a good chance that this is the guy's, but not 100% because he only had the picture of the black guy there.
Yeah.
So the white guy came back with the new card. He let him use it. And he bought around $50 worth of Doritos and beer and stuff in the mini mart. And then he stalled by packing the bag slowly, and he moved the cell phone over to the side so the guy wouldn't see his cell phone. When he took his bags out to the car, he came back and said, I lost my cell phone. Help me find it. So he took his time looking for it down the aisles and so forth.
And the clerk had hidden the cell phone under the counter, right, to give the cops time?
Exactly.
Yeah. In fact, let me play a quick soundbite because Channel 4, ComoNews.com, they covered your story. And here is the clerk with their reporter.
I just did it, and I have to hold him. I call the cops.
He hit the panic button for police, then delayed the suspects by hiding their cell phone, even when it rang under the register.
When they figured that I had the phone, I told them, I took your phone. I'm not going to bring it back.
He told them, I took your phone and I'm not going to give it back. I mean, this guy, you're right, Mavi. This guy took a chance to try to help you catch these guys.
And then the black gentleman came in out of the car, and he knew then for sure it was the bad guys. There was no question then.
Yeah.
And he still held their phone, and they said, we're going to call the police because you're stealing our phone. He says, call the police. I don't care. I'm not giving you the phone, which was awfully brave of him. Really brave of him.
So Pierce County sheriffs, they were able to arrive and arrest these guys then, right?
And the Gig Harbor police, there were 3 or 4 cars.
Okay.
And they were only going to arrest the white guy because he was the one that had actually used the card because they didn't have all that other investigative background on the black guy, and the clerk wasn't able to explain it well enough to him. So I said, put him on the phone, and I explained to the officer that this black guy is the first guy that used my cards. And there's pictures there in the gas station of him. Do not let him go. He is the first culprit. I mean, he is the bad guy.
Yeah.
And so they said, okay. And then I took a picture on my iPhone and sent it to them on a cell phone there. And they printed it out, and they had all that information of where he had done it before.
Look at you, Mavi. This is awesome. And then they checked the car, and inside the car they found a gun, meth, heroin, jewelry, and a bunch of stolen credit cards. So this was
right.
Indeed
and
a ring.
One of them has a federal hold on them.
My goodness. I got to tell you, Mavi, you are a bulldog. That's pretty impressive detective work there. Nice job.
Well, I talked to the prosecutor today, and I gave him a few tips on how to do this. Simply Done, so they can do that in the future. Because I'll tell you, I was very, very disappointed when the first officer came out here. I called them after the burglary. You know, there was someone there at the house of the burglary. But the next day after I found him using my card, I called the non-emergency number, and the officer came to my office. And the first thing he said to me after, I said, I have these three places where he went. I've got the manager's names and number all printed out here. Do you know what the police officer said to me, the sheriff? He goes, I don't want you calling me every time you get someone using your credit card.
Jeez. Yeah, well, it's an epidemic. It's an epidemic around here, the entire region, and they've too often they won't do anything at that level. Well, Mavi, thank you so much for sharing your story. Congratulations, and I hope they put these creeps, as you called them, I hope they put them behind bars for a good long time.
Well, they're not going to be getting out of jail because the other one has gun charges and they found guns on them, so they're going to be in jail for a while.
Nicely done, Mavi. Well, thank you for taking the time. It's great talking with you.
Same here, and thank you so much for airing it. It will probably help other people.
Yeah, people, you just gave them a crash course on what to do. That is Mavi McFarland down in Gig Harbor. You want thoughts on this? You have thoughts? Give me a text, 98973. Email us, mynorthwest.com, the Dory Monson Show page, and we have much more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. I gotta tell you, I get very frustrated with my fellow media members in this city, this region, because we've proven time and time again that government will lie about anything and everything if it means getting more money. That is their holy grail, is your money. And they will do and say anything in pursuit of it. And I know I'm the most skeptical watchdog of government, but the fact that so many people aren't even a tiny bit skeptical or watchdoggy it's infuriating to me. I'll give you a perfect example. So there's a story that's been circulating, and I've been hearing it for the last 2 days now. The headline in the Seattle Times, opioid overdose deaths cost Washington State billions. Study says. And they say it's a study from a U.S. Senate committee in advance of legislation that Patty Murray is going to introduce. And what they said is that opioid deaths have cost Washington State $34 billion in the past 4 years. Now, I heard that story yesterday. And I thought, how in the world could opioid deaths cost our state $34 billion over 4 years? And they said in 2016 alone, the cost of the opioid crisis for Washington residents, $9.19 billion. And they say $7 billion was attributed to the financial impact of overdose deaths. $7 billion because of the overdose deaths. So I decided to dig into this, unlike everybody else who just, man, you get something from Patty Murray and you don't fact check it? The number of opioid deaths in our state in 2016, which is the year they were talking about, 764. $7 billion is the cost of 764 opioid deaths. Now, there's a tremendous tragedy for anybody who loved those people who OD'd. But we're talking about a public cost now. So if you do a little simple basic math and you divide $7 billion by 764 deaths, Patty Murray is trying to tell us that each opioid death costs our state $9,162,000. I'm sorry. The most productive workers in our society, the vast majority, unless you're, you know, Bill Gates, Jeff Bezos, but for most of us, if we die, we're not worth $9 million in financial impact. And I guarantee you, most people who are dying of heroin or overdoses aren't worth $9 million of impact. Doesn't mean it's not sad. Just means this study is as phony as can be. Why doesn't the media check things? Fast 15 next.